Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tilton at 10 continues. Hour number two, brought to you by Larry Malone. Sit and Sleep. He'll, of course, beat anyone's advertised price, and your mattress is free. I got tickets to go see Andrew Dice Clay in an intimate setting. One of my favorite places, the Canyon Club. Did a lot of charity events there in Santa Clarita. So I will give you a chance to win those tickets when we do the news quiz. Get ready to call 800-222-5222. Also, want to talk to you about the Oscars. Are you going to watch, and do you care? Does it still resonate with people, or because it's become somewhat political every year, do people, they just want to escape and they don't want to watch people celebrate each other? Is it becoming an antiquated thing and do millennials care at all? 800-222-5222. Also wanted to check in with Wade Major, film critic and co-host, producer of the DigiGods podcast and a member of the Los Angeles Film Critics Association. Good morning, Wade. How are you?
I'm good. It's a very interesting Oscar morning.
It is. The interesting thing for me was seeing that the total of the nine movies did less than The Last Jedi, if you add them all up. So is that a bad thing? You usually want an Oscar year where there's at least one or two mega hits that people can have some kind of shared experience with. When they're smaller, it's harder for the Oscars to get an audience, isn't it?
Oh yeah, but this has been the reality now since about 2005. I mean, 2005 was kind of a big pivotal moment when the indies officially took over, the boat capsized. And, I think we've only had two best picture winners in the last 13 years that were studio films. They were both Warner Brothers. So this is the biggest drought now in history for all the other studios. They have basically evacuated the Academy Award space, and it's kind of a niche indie celebration now. There's very little separating the Oscars from the Spirit Awards.
Let me ask you this two-way, because you know, you see a lot of movies. I'm trapped in a house, and I don't get out that much, but do indie films, I've been reading that they insinuate that they're mostly white and privileged. Do you find that to be accurate when you paint a broad brush on indie films?
No, not really. Look, it's hard for any movie to get financing. It's hard for any movie to get made. And it's the only color that anybody ultimately really cares about is green. I know that's a cliche, but it's very true. It's so hard for any movie to make money that people start looking at statistics in order to decide whether or not a movie's going to be profitable. And the only statistics that exist are statistics for movies that have already been made and actors have already made movies. So you get kind of caught in a rut of doing what has already been done before. Originality is very, very hard to make pay off. But when it does, it pays off big. And I think the big example this year is Get Out. You know, Get Out is a movie. It was the earliest release of any nominated Best Picture back in February. You know, the only other one that was released before November was Dunkirk, and that's, you know, a Christopher Nolan film. Get Out, debut film from Jordan Peele. He wrote, directed, and produced it, made it for $5 million. It made $200 million globally, and it's the biggest hit of any film nominated. And, you know, people should take a cue from that.
Samuel Jackson, by the way, not many people caught up the film, but Samuel Jackson said, really, couldn't we get an American brother to play the lead role instead of a British guy who can understand the American experience, being a black man in America?
That is a bit of a sticking point for a lot of black actors. I have heard that, because there is this feeling that all the actors that are getting the parts now are like Daniel Kaluuya and Idris Elba and Daniel, there's a whole cast of black British actors who've kind of invaded, and there is a bit of a conflict there. That's something I'm not qualified or really in a position to address, but I will say I think Kaluuya did a great job in the film, and I think he really deserves
it. It was a fun film. It was a great film. I was blindsided by it because I didn't anticipate what I was going to go see, and I didn't hear much buzz about it when it came out, and it was tremendous. My other question to you, and then we'll look about the other films, because I put it out there in the phone number, 800-222-5222. Do people avoid these ceremonies now because they are becoming, A, too political? And you know what you're going to see this year. Are you going to see people stand up in their own community and talk about how this actor got paid, this male actor got paid 17 times what I got paid? Those are going to be some of the speeches, I'm guessing.
I'll tell you, there is no question that the politicization of the industry, of the awards, the messaging has definitely hurt their broader appeal. That has been an arc that has been on its way ever since the studio system kind of fell apart and Marlon Brando was able to send a white woman up there as Sachon Little Feather to collect an award for his Godfather win in 1972 and make a big statement about treatment of Native Americans. was the beginning of turning the Oscars into kind of something more than just an award ceremony. And that happened when you didn't have the studio heads around anymore, the old moguls who kept an iron control over the public relations industry. You know, once that was gone, the gloves were off, and social media has just made it even worse. It's very hard to control the messaging of the people involved, of the films, of the companies that make them. It's all so fragmented and democratized now, it's very hard to put that genie back in the bottle, and it has definitely hurt the broader appeal.
Yeah, and you're waiting not to hear about the movie. You're waiting to hear about who said what at the event. Let's go through Best Picture real quick. Call Me by Your Name, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, Shape of Water, and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I saw some of them. I was glad that The Shape of Water by Guillermo del Toro was nominated. It was nominated for so many awards because it's, you don't see anything like this. Movies like this come along once in a lifetime. He's so off the wall in how he presents stuff. And this could have been such a corny, creepy, weird movie. It's Beauty and the Beast with a fish. However, how he presented it was beyond belief. I was stunned by the movie, but not everybody loves it. Not everybody's taste.
Well, you know, Del Toro is a really interesting figure. I mean, he is, and by the way, you know, we have to point out too that we have had, you know, the big three Mexican directors have directed films that have earned the lion's share of awards in like the past 5 or 6 years. So, I mean, we've Mexican filmmakers have really kind of taken over big budget Oscar filmmaking in Hollywood. And this is Del Toro, you know, stepping up to the plate in a very big way. He has always been an amazing stylist. He is of that generation that sort of harkens back to Spielberg and to the old directors of the 50s and the 60s, where he is a meticulous craftsman, and every single facet of filmmaking factors in with equal weight. And he really puts his films together in a beautiful way. You can tell that this is one man's very complete vision, and that he controls every aspect of the
project. It's pretty stunning.
The Shape of Water is a testament to that.
The other thing that makes me laugh, too, is poor Gary Oldman had to do 5 hours of makeup before he even showed up to set. Then he's got to do a 14-hour day. Then he's got to go home in 2 hours, take off the makeup for 2 hours, then come back and do it again. He's probably 140 degrees there, can't urinate for 18 hours, and he's competing with Greta Gerwig and Lady Bird, which is a nice, lightweight. I know it got a lot of good buzz, and I know a lot of people love it, but to me it was an okay coming-of-age story, and I can't understand all the buzz. And this poor guy, I hear, did an incredible job as Churchill, but may not be the guy who gets the award.
You know, Gary Oldman is absolutely going to win Best Actor. There's not a question about that. I think that's as much of a lock as anything. Everyone loves Gary Oldman. He's a class act. He's been around forever. He's never won anything. If you're going to give him an award, if you're going to acknowledge that Gary Oldman deserves an award, if you're going to acknowledge that the guy who played Sid Vicious and Beethoven and Churchill should maybe get an award to recognize him for his career, this is the one to do it. He's one of the great all-time screen actors who's ever lived, and this is such a crowning achievement. I think this is a no-brainer. You just check Churchill and you give it to him. It's not even a question.
And by the way, Daniel Day-Lewis. So Daniel Day-Lewis will not win it after learning how to sew a suit together over 3 years. What is with my Daniel? Look, I watched that movie too, The Phantom Thread. I love the director, Paul Thomas Anderson. I love Boogie Nights, love Magnolia. I love his bad movies even. But Daniel Day-Lewis, the movie was great up until about the midway, two-third point, and then I went, I just lost interest. I was shocked.
You stuck with it longer than I did. No, I agree with you. I loved it for about 40 minutes. It was on the verge of being my favorite film for about 40 minutes, and then it just took a hard
turn. Yeah, you go, there's no movie here anymore. It's just, okay.
You know, Paul Thomas Anderson tends to do that. He throws curveballs at you, and he did it with Magnolia. He did it a little bit. You know, he's done a few of his other films. There Will Be Blood kind of does it as well. And that's just something either you ride along with him or you don't.
So I noticed that a couple of movies didn't make it, and they were snubs. First of all, we should talk about James Franco, who won an award already earlier this season. Nothing. Yeah. Zip. Did the voting come in before he was accused of sexual harassment, or did it come in?
It it overlapped a little bit. Honestly, I don't think that that really factored in all that much. I think I think people are reading more into that than they probably should. Because, you know, this is a super competitive category, and the films that tend to have stronger chances at getting acting nominations are those that are nominated for Best Picture. There was no way that a film about the making of The Room was ever going to be nominated for Best Picture. Disaster Artist is kind of a culty, appealing film for indie fans. It was never, ever going to be in the heavy awards mix. But you look, Timothée Chalamet and Call Me By Your Name, Best Picture nominee. Daniel Day-Lewis and Phantom Thread, Best Picture nominee. Daniel Kaluuya and Get Out, Best Picture nominee. Gary Oldman and Darkest Hour, Best Picture nominee. That leaves one spot for somebody that was not in a Best Picture. And that went to Denzel Washington, who's gotten, this is like his 10th nomination. So Denzel Washington is a no-brainer. You're awarding him in the same way that you award Meryl Streep, because, you know, they can do no wrong. So there was really no way that James Franco was going to slot in here.
Were you surprised? And I'm talking to Wade Major, film critic, co-host of the producer of the DigiGods podcast. Were you surprised that Downsizing didn't make it? I, Tonya didn't make it? Downsizing was promoted as his major epic film.
Yeah.
I hated it. This one was one that took me about halfway through, and I went, where did this go?
The consensus was...
Oh, I think I lost Wade. I lost you. Yeah. Wait for a second there.
The consensus was that this was Alexander Payne's first misfire, and the film was not popular. There was some talk of it maybe getting, you know, a supporting actress nomination, but the general lack of popularity and the disappointment with the film from a filmmaker of that stature, that tends to be very difficult. When you're a filmmaker who comes with really high expectations, who's already won Academy Awards, and you don't live up to your own bar, people punish you for it, and they punish the film for it, and that's what happened there for sure. I share your surprise that I, Tonya, and particularly for me, Molly's Game, did not get more love. I thought those two films and Mudbound would receive more nominations. They weren't all entirely ignored, but, you know, Jessica Chastain should have been in there instead of Meryl Streep.
And if we didn't mention Molly's Game, I love Molly's Game. It was about the celebrity card tournaments that happened here in Hollywood. Yeah. It was based on that. It was beautifully written, amazingly acted. It's one of those movies, just like Social Network, that he had written. Yeah. And you go, and when it's done, I'm exhausted. It felt like an action film, but nothing much happened action-wise. It was all through character. It was a wonderful movie. And I laughed out loud. I thought the guy did an amazing job directing it. I didn't know why Allison Janney, everybody was making a big point about her until I saw it. And I thought, my gosh, is she incredible in that. So people out there, if you want to see two really good movies, Molly's Game and I, Tonya, really great movies.
I love them both.
Yeah.
Aaron Sorkin killed it in Molly's Game. I mean, I thought that was one of the best films of the year. I would love to have seen that get more nominations, director and actress, but, you know, it at least got screenplay.
So where's the movie business going? The bigger issue, Wade, is what's going to happen with our industry here? We all benefit from it because it's a big part of our town. We live in Hollywood, Movie Town USA. But I talked to a filmmaker the other day who said it's drastically changing. It's harder to make profit on movies. It's harder to figure out how to make a movie that's going to play overseas. We need China. We need Europe. So the American experience is not that interesting to people over there. So that's not going to be happening as much. Where's it going? Millennials aren't going to movies as much as older folks. And older folks aren't going that much now because you got 60-inch televisions where you can have the experience in your bedroom, and you don't have to go out and hassle with parking and gas, etc. Is the movie business starting to decline, and they're getting panicked about it, or is this another false alarm?
You know what? No one knows, and that's why everyone is panicked. And the question is that everything you just said, that is a topic of conversation at every lunch, at every dinner, at every award ceremony, in every lobby, and has been for the last several years. And the answer is nobody really knows. We're in a period of flux. And certainly, you know, having Harvey Weinstein gone now, everybody sees what an award season is without Harvey Weinstein, and it's a wide open field. But what they also see is, again, that indies have completely taken it over, and with Amazon and Netflix, and the fact that now we have the lowest movie attendance in 22 years, and like you say, millennials aren't going to the movies. The more that theaters become like living rooms and living rooms become like theaters, what's the difference? It's a real question as to where we're going and what's going to be made. The good news is that more product is being made than has ever been made before, thanks to Netflix, thanks to Amazon, thanks to streaming, thanks to the fact that you know, you have these outlets that can, that don't have to, there isn't a limited number of screens, there isn't a limited number of time slots during the week, that there is, in theory, an unlimited amount of opportunities to put material out there. But that also means there's more noise, and everything has to compete with everything else. So it's harder to get somebody to pay attention to you. So we really don't know where it's going to go. We have to sort of find our way through it and figure out the new paradigm, and that's going to take a few years.
Wade, before you go, I got to ask you something, too, about the pay. I mentioned it before, the pay inequality, and I'm sure it'll be coming up at the Oscars. What's going to happen to movies and movie stars? So all of a sudden, I want Brad Pitt in my movie, and I think he puts butts in seats. So he gets $22 million. And I'm going to have a female lead in that movie, and I'm not sure if she puts butts in seats, but I need a female lead to play his paramour. So am I not paying him $20 million because she's going to be, that person's going to be screaming and there's going to be a movement? And I pay him, do I pay him less because I have to give more parity? How are they going to quantify how people are getting paid?
It's going to be very hard to move away from, you know, it's so hard to make money on movies. It's going to be very hard to move away from the old system, which is a flawed system, to be honest, but it's the only system they've got, which is where they look at the past movies you've done, and there is a certain evaluation of your box office value, and you get paid based on that. And they're going to continue to do that, and that is going to generally continue to pay certain men more than women. However, as we are seeing with Jennifer Lawrence and Margot Robbie, there are a lot of women who are now in a position to green light movies, to get movies made through their names, and they are going to be increasingly proving their box office value because women tend to be the decision makers when it comes to what
But here, so if I'm an agent, I say to a movie studio, hey, so you got my A-list female talent. You're not putting in her movie for $12 million. I happen to know, because I represent a lot of other talent, too, that male talent are making $18, $20 million. I may just leak out there to the media that you're only paying her that. You're not paying her what you would pay a male talent to do a male-driven movie. She's the lead. Do you want that to happen? And now the studio's sitting there going, well, how do we justify this? If she is the lead, and we made her lead because we feel that she can drive butts to seats, How do they then justify that they wouldn't give her the same pay as a lead male?
That's a great question, and that ultimately comes down to the negotiation with the agents. The one thing that is interesting is that there is a new law in California which was designed to prevent unequal pay in corporations, in the boardrooms and so forth, where you're not allowed to sort of inquire at a previous employer as to what someone got paid. You can't look into salary history anymore, which makes it very hard for the studios. So now, because that's how they do business.
Right.
So now you're going to see a lot of people asking for waivers in their contracts so that they can call your last producer and say, what did this actor make? What did this actress make?
Boy.
And, you know, it's going to get really ugly and very complicated. But the other thing that complicates it is the fact that we really don't have movie stars anymore. People don't open movies anymore. You switch from television to movies and back to television to streaming, and Will Smith will do Bright on Netflix. And, you know, everybody just goes where the work is now. There's sort of the hierarchy of work that led some people to the top is gone, and Tom Cruise may well be our last movie star, and he's by no means the movie star
he used to be, I think, is what you said before you dropped out.
Yes, that's correct.
Wade, we got to run, but thank you for coming on. Wade is the film critic, co-host, producer of DigiGods Podcast, and, of course, a member of the Los Angeles Film Critics Association, and it's DigiGods.com. DigiGods.
And CineGods.com.
And CineGods. You got
C-I-N-E.
Another.
Yeah.
Good for you. All right. And thanks for coming on, Wayne. I always love having you on and talking movies. And I'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure.
You take it
easy.
Have
a great one.
All right. Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Till the 10 continues right after this. Peter Till the 10 continues. Talk Radio 790 KABC. I would call right now 800-222-5222 if you want to play the Peter Till the News Quiz for tickets to go see Andrew Dice Clay. Andrew Dice Clay, a comedian who sold out arenas, and his Showtime show, Dice, is one of the funniest shows because he makes fun of himself and who he is. It's really well-written and well-acted, and he's been in a lot of movies, Woody Allen's movies, he's been in a couple others, Blue Jasmine. So you get to see Andrew Dice Clay up close and personal in February, but you got to call now to play the news quiz, 800-222-5222. Interesting, when we're talking about elections and we're talking about how they go in the midterm elections, something you should be aware of, Monday, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled that they were going to throw out the state's congressional map, and it looks like they're saying disadvantaged Democrats. So they ordered the Republican state legislature to redraw the map in advance of the May primary. So this has happened. It's the second time it's happened. It's, I think North Carolina too. So now that they're redrawing maps to make them more balanced, this could affect quite a few elections coming up in the midterms. We'll see how many more of these maps are going to be redrawn and redistricted. So that's something that you should make a mental note of when we're looking at the midterm elections. All right, 800-222-5222. We're going to do the Peter Tilden News Quiz for tickets to go see Andrew Dice Clay up close and personal in concert when we return right after the news. Talk Radio 790 KBC.
KABC News is live and local at 11:30. I'm Jeff Whittle, and a powerful 7.9 earthquake hit the Gulf of Alaska a little after midnight this morning. It was centered about 175 miles southwest, southeast rather, of Kodiak, but no injuries are reported. That trembler did trigger a tsunami warning for the entire west coast, including here in Southern California, but that warning was canceled at 4:19 this morning. The largest aftershock so far is measured 5.3 in magnitude. President Trump just told reporters that he is not concerned that Attorney General Jeff Sessions was interviewed by special counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigators last week.
No, I'm not at all concerned.
Did you talk to him about
that? No, I didn't, but I'm not at all concerned.
The president also said he is not worried that the tariffs he slapped on solar panels and washing machines from China will spark a trade war.
There won't be a trade war, by the way. There'll only be stock increases for the companies that are in this country, and that's what happened today. If you look at solar and if you look at the washing machine companies, that's really what happened today. You're going to have people getting jobs again, and we're going to make our own product again. It's been a long time.
We are just learning that FBI Director Chris Wray is replacing his chief of staff, who previously served under fired FBI Director James Comey, amid reports that Wray almost quit after being pressured by Attorney General Jeff Sessions to fire Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe. And Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer has taken funding for President Trump's border wall off the table and future negotiations with the White House regarding DACA, according to a Democratic aide. Schumer reportedly called the White House yesterday and said the proposal, which Schumer put on the table during a Friday meeting with President Trump, was being withdrawn. Talk Radio 790 KABC Sports. Clippers lost to the Minnesota Timberwolves 126-118 last night at Staples Center, while the Lakers put their two-game winning streak on the line when they host the Celtics at 7:30 tonight at Staples. LA Kings visit the Vancouver Canucks starting at 6:30 p.m. tonight right here on KABC, while the Ducks host the New York Rangers starting at 7 p.m. And that's sports on the home of the LA Kings, 790 KABC. Traffic, a market check, weather, and more Tilden at 10 next. KABC News Time, 1133.
Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tilden at 10 continues. We're going to play the news quiz in just a moment. Call if you want to go see Andrew Dice Clay. Very funny man. And Dino and I were just talking off the air about his Showtime show, which is hilarious. You should check that out. 800-222-5222 if you want to play. So do you like the way it's taking longer to get around in Los Angeles, where they're taking away lanes and they're building bigger projects? And in almost every corner of Los Angeles, they're building these humongous, humongous buildings that they didn't zone for in the past. Well, now, be aware of this. Senator Scott Wiener, a Democrat out of San Francisco, he's proposed a bill called the SB 827. And what this would do, remember this, because this is not local, this is from the state, it empowers the state to override local zoning laws to let developers build taller and more densely around rail stations and bus lines if they offer frequent service during rush hour. It would let developers put up buildings between 4 and 8 stories tall, even if local zoning codes don't allow it, and greater height would be allowed if they're closer to transit lines and on major streets. So now, the state is saying, yeah, we need housing, man. There's not enough housing down there. Let's blow it out. And it wouldn't apply. It would apply not only in commercial areas, but also in single family zones, which a lot of times have been exempt from upzoning. So the state is now saying, you got to do this. We got to build a lot of housing. An estimated 3.5 million more homes are needed by 2020 to meet the population and market demands. What do you think about that? 800-222-5222. Because they want to make everything walkable, bikeable, and transit friendly. So here's what's going to happen now. It's going to be the state saying all clear to take money from developers, because what's not in here is affordable housing. And what happens when you don't put affordable housing next to these rail lines? The people who live in these high rises that you've allowed them to build now, they drive their cars to work because they don't take public transportation. Lower income people take public transportation. Or if it's really, really, really easy to get where you're going, but guess what? The state now wants to take a bigger role in this, in modeling our communities and our plans around transit. And I get that they want to get us out of our cars. But, and I mentioned the project on La Cienega where we moved from. They're going to build now on La Cienega near See's Candy. If you know where that is, because, well, if you've been down La Cienega, you know where it is because you've sat in front of See's for 20 minutes moving an inch at a time. Dino's laughing. And then you go past Target. And it takes you about an hour to go one block at this point. And if you get off the 10 freeway at La Cienega, it's almost backed up onto the freeway. Well, they're building this giant development now that's going to have stores on the bottom floor, like a mall, and then it's going to have businesses, and then it's going to have residential. And the great thing about it is you can walk right to the metro from there. But I guarantee you, you can't afford to live there because the prices are going to be insane, really expensive. And most of those people, not all of those people, are not going to take that metro, even though it's convenient. They're going to drive their cars, and it's going to slow down La Cienega even worse, and Venice, which is going to feed into that, and Washington, and it's going to create insanity around that area, which is already almost impossible to navigate. And what they've done now is they've pushed people to go off of La Cienega. If you go north on La Cienega towards Sunset, and you're down near Venice, everybody bails off of La Cienega. Everybody goes on Rodeo. They go all the back roads. Now all these residential areas have cars attacking these streets that were never, ever built to have that many cars, to have that much traffic. And it's also dangerous. You got kids playing on the streets. You got elderly people walking on those streets. So they forced people off of those streets. And now the state is saying, guess what? You can upzone land around transit stops for residential development, even if it doesn't include affordable housing. So have at it. You're gentrifying areas which were areas of middle income before, and now people aren't going to afford to live there unless they have $5,000 a month, $7,000 a month to live in a condo in a tower like that. Yes, you'll have your rail lines near there. You know the people that I know who have money that live near the rail lines, you know what they do? They take it to concerts downtown. They take it to the Rams game. They're not driving. They're not taking it to work. They're not taking it other than sometimes when it's easy. And in Santa Monica, all I hear is my friends went to the rail line there and said, there's no parking. So I'd love to take it, but they didn't build any parking. And guess what? The state is not concerned that much about the parking. They're concerned, hey, you know what? You should open this up and start upzoning just about everywhere. And don't worry about the affordable housing part of that, which is pretty nuts because it conflicts with some of the things we voted on down here. Which aren't working out that well to begin with either. And, I mean, there's some articles out of a $103 million giveaway to New York, a developer that stinks, which was in, City Watch by Jack Humphreyville, and on and on and on how these developers are making a ton of money and we're paying for it. Talk Radio 790 KBC, Peter Tilden at 10 continues right after this. Talk Radio 790 KABC's Peter Tilden at 10 continues. Hey, everyone's doing it. Use your Amazon Dot and Echo to listen to KABC. All you got to do is say, Alexa, enable KABC AM skills. Make listening to KABC even easier, faster, and more entertaining. Well, this is interesting, and I'll let you judge, and maybe we can discuss this more tomorrow. First of all, there's breaking news on CNN that it looks like James Comey was interviewed by the Mueller team in the Russia probe. We also know that Jeff Sessions was interviewed on Wednesday in the probe. Another piece of the pie is people are now saying Melania is not going to the Davos, to Switzerland for the big get-together there because she's upset with Donald about all of the harassment, the stuff with the porn star. So the $130,000 payment, the interesting thing there is that when Mike Pence was asked about the porn star, he said, this is old news, this is nothing, but nobody is denying the payment. Why would a lawyer form an LLC in Delaware to make a $130,000 payment? What's the answer to that? So Tony Perkins, who's the president of Family Research Council, which is ultra-conservative, was asked about Stormy Daniels meeting him at the golf tournament in 2006 and the $130,000 payment. And really interesting what he says, and I'd love to get your feedback on this. Like I said, maybe we can do it tomorrow, but give a listen to what he said.
Evangelical support is not unconditional. If the president were to all of a sudden revert back to some of that behavior as president, the evangelical support will not be there for him.
Yeah.
So it's based on, we kind of gave him, all right, you get a mulligan. You get a do over here. You can start.
A mulligan for 70 years of his life.
Hey, look, the guy committed, this is what he's committed to.
Right.
And as long as he commits to that and continues on that, he will have the support of evangelicals.
So isn't that an interesting thing that he's speaking for all evangelicals, by the way, and I wonder how you feel if you're an evangelical. He gets a mulligan. You get a mulligan, we look the other way because policy is more interested than behavior. So if he in fact did that, that's okay. We'll look the other way. And that's where we are today with the evangelical movement. Remember Mr. Moore running for office and all the allegations against him. It's more about the policy. It's more about what he's voting for or what he's getting done than who he is. And we can discuss that at length tomorrow. Maybe you can take it up with Dr. Drew and Lauren when they come in. 800-222-5222. It's an interesting way to put it. The president, for all you guys out there, come home and say, can I get a mulligan tonight, sweetheart? Talk Radio 790 KABC.